It's time for the Better Health Radio Show, and we say good evening to Dr. Boyce.
Good evening, Ronnie. How are you doing?
Looking forward to another great program today, Renee.
Yes. What is the name of that song that was just being played?
That's Feels So Good by Chuck Mangione. He used to play on CBC TV about 3,554 times every day in a break.
Okay, so wonderful piece of music. I was just singing along. It's good to hear you again, Ronnie.
Great to have you here as well.
Okay, good evening to everybody. Good evening to our listeners, and welcome to the Better Health Radio Show, helping you to live your best life. The numbers to call into the studio, 434-1790, if you have a question for us, if you want to send us a WhatsApp. Wow, I can't remember the WhatsApp number. I've been out from the studio too long. Ronnie, you can help me with the WhatsApp number.
Yes, we got number four. It's 266-IVOB, 266-IVOB, and that translates to 266-4862. All right?
Yes.
You got
Thank
it?
Thank you so very much. Got it.
All right, good.
Yes, so this evening, we are going to have another very interesting show for you. This evening, we are going to be talking to some special men and women from our emergency ambulance service. So let's say good evening to Wendy Cadogan.
Hi, good evening.
And Mr. Mark Boyce.
Hi, good evening.
And we have as well Ms. Sharon Bascom.
Hi, good evening.
Okay, welcome to the show, lady and gentlemen.
Good evening. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Ms. Bascom, or is it Mrs. Bascom?
Mrs. Bascom.
Yes, Mrs. Bascom, she's one of the senior dispatchers. She's the one who interacts with the callers. Mark Boyce, he's a paramedic, and he is one of the, he's the person who is responsible for all of the operations. So my first question, what is the correct name of the department?
The correct name of the department is the Emergency Ambulance Service.
The Emergency Ambulance Service. Okay,
yes,
so let me ask. Go ahead.
Yes, the Emergency Ambulance Service is a department within the Queen Elizabeth Hospital.
So there must be a very strong connection between, and you're connected to the Accident and Emergency Department of the hospital.
Yes, we have connection.
Okay, so first of all, let's ask a little personal question. Why did each of you get into the Emergency Ambulance Service? You could have been a firefighter, you could have been a lawyer, you could have been a garbage collector, somebody packing groceries at a supermarket, an accountant. But each of you is involved in the allied healthcare profession. So what got you into your profession?
Yeah, Sharon, you want to go on with that first?
Yeah, I'll answer that first. Hi, good evening again. I used to be a telephone operator previously at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital. So I used to work in accident emergency as well. So they usually call in if they have a dire emergency and they need to let the emergency department have on standby one of the rooms available, especially if it's a stat room case. So they will interact with the telephone operator who relays the message to them. So I find it exciting, and I always wanted to be part of it because, to me, I love to help. I love communication. So the... There was a dispatch course. It came around. I was interested. I did the course and was successful in the course. And here I am today as a dispatcher, at the ambulance service. And I love it.
Congratulations. I can actually hear from your voice that this is something that you are passionate about. And I think that when you're passionate about your work, it really isn't work. It might be challenging, but
yes,
it's something that you love doing. So, Mark,
yes,
thank you, Derry. Why don't you tell us, Mark, why you became a paramedic?
Hi, good evening again to my teammates and listeners. After leaving school in 1993, I went to the Allen School. I was a member of the Cadet Corps, and I did a medical training course, the first responder course, as a cadet with the Barbados Defense Force. And out of that, I was successful in that training, and that kind of led me into emergency medical services. I tried for the police force, but I was told it was too short. So, seeing that I did well with the medical training, I was advised to give it a shot. And I applied. I was accepted for training. And 26 years later, here I am.
You see, it pays to be short, right? Everybody knows that I am short as well. So being short served the country. Okay, be proud that you are short, Bart, because you have done a diligent service to your country. Imagine if you were a policeman. I'm sure you would have been a wonderful policeman, but you are exactly where you belong. You don't think so?
Yes, ma'am.
And now we move on to Wendy. Why are you where you are right now?
Well, at first I did not choose the service chose me, I would say.
Oh.
Because I had originally applied to the police force like Mark, and I had applied to the fire service, and I got a call from the fire service, and that was in 1984. Around that same time, there was some talk about the amalgamation of the ambulance service and the fire service. And so I was interviewed for the ambulance service, and when I went, I liked the whole setup and thing, so I was hired then as an EMT. I worked my way up through to a paramedic, was on the first paramedic course, did some management courses, and worked my way up to assistant ambulance officer, and now I'm the ambulance officer.
Well, congratulations to you as well. So my next question is going to go to you. Now, when I was listening to you just now, you mentioned EMT, and the rank above EMT would be paramedic.
Yes.
And then, so explain to our listeners the difference between the EMT and the paramedic.
The EMT is the person who would have done the basic training course, which lasts a semester in college. So he has all the emergency medical techniques to perform the job. The paramedic, on the other hand, would have done that, but in addition, he would have done an extra year in college. So he would be in position to administer some drugs, interpret ECGs, in the emergency context, and so on.
Okay, and for our listeners, an ECG stands for electrocardiogram, which is a special reading. You place electrodes or devices, small devices, on the outside of the chest, and this allows the doctor, the nurse, the paramedic, whomever, to read what's going on with the heart. So it's a very common painless procedure that goes on, as we will see, in the ambulance as well as in the hospital.
Right.
So what we're going to do for our listeners, we're going to start at the beginning. Where is the ambulance service located? Because I know that it moved. I know where it is, but there might be some persons out there who don't know where the ambulance service is located.
Okay. Our current headquarters is in Wilde, building 18 Wilde. Some people would know it as the Donnelly building. Other people would say the building above Banks Breweries. Other people would say the building next to Edgar Corpin Polyclinic.
Okay, well, you see, you are a true Bajan, right? Because when you said above, I was completely lost.
Exactly. Exactly. You'll probably get to that when we get to directions and so on.
Yes, I know we're going to talk about it. We are going to talk about it. It's an important thing, I know. For those of you who are listening, right, you might think that I might sound as though I am on steroids or something. But this department and the accident and emergency department, these are, I would like to say, my pet departments. I don't get to interact with them as often as I did before. But I actually wanted to work in accident and emergency. But no, another career path chose me. So the ambulance service is located in Wilde. So we're going to start with you, Sharon.
Exactly.
Okay.
Somebody dials 511. What will they hear?
First, they will hear a qualified trained medical dispatcher, because we're trained from the National Academy of Emergency Medical Dispatch from the USA. First, we answer the phone. We have to ask some questions, which we call some entry questions, because we follow a protocol.
Mm-hmm.
We ask the address of the emergency, the phone number that the person is calling from, the name of the caller, and we ask the caller to tell us exactly what is happening with the patient. Then
we go on
to ask other questions. Sorry?
No, what I said is that listeners can look forward to a mini simulation of
you
later on in the show. We're going to do a little mini simulation as we go on. So you ask these questions, name, address, telephone number. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and exactly what is going on with the patient. We get the name of the patient as well and the age. And also, after we've heard what is wrong with the patient, we ask the question if the person suffers with any illnesses or if they're taking medication for any illnesses.
So you've gotten this information. Any other questions? And I guess the questions would depend on what the person is relaying to you.
Yes. As I said, we have the protocol to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And from what you said, when we do the little simulation, we will go there. Where we shunt to the illness, which would be if the person calls and say chest pain, then we ask another set of questions, what we call key question, where we can gather more information. And from what we hear there, we would send off the unit. They can get the directions on the way to the call, or if it is not as we would call, let me see. If a difficulty breathing is what we call a priority one call. So we can send off, we can get the information, and we can give the information via the radio that we have, the VHF radio.
Okay, so while the unit is already on the way, you're still relaying information to them so that cuts down on the time for them to reach you.
Yes. So we get the directions. We usually ask the persons to be exact with the directions, as we heard before, with the below and above. We like to know a left turn, a right turn, if they can give the name of the road, or if there's a church, you know, we can identify with that church and we can move from there. Yes, a landmark. Thank you very much. I was looking for that word.
No problem.
We can get a we can get a landmark and we can move from there, because some people like to bring us from all downtown. But then, you know, if we can have a landmark from there, we can move from the landmark, which even helps even more, because remember, the ambulance is on the way. So we can give that information where it is on the way and try to get them there as quick as possible.
So we've given you the information. So the paramedics or EMTs who are there, they would be the next persons to get the information. They would be the next link in the chain?
Yes. The calls that we take, each call has a run number, as we call it. The calls are placed in a book. Then we put them in the system. We give them the run number. We give them the name of the patient, the information that can give. Mind you, we are trained to do CPR as well. We can give CPR instructions over the phone, and we can help with deliveries as well over the phone.
Oh.
Yes.
Well, that is great.
Yes, it is.
Especially in this setting now where we are, you know, confined at home for a little bit. Oh, that's very good. So we move on to Mark for a little bit now. So I guess, Mark, you would be the next person to pick up the information from here.
Yes.
So, Sharon has told you that there's a patient who lives in, let's say, Mile and a Quarter, St. Peter. So you've gotten this information. You've gotten some information about the health of the patient and so on. What do you do? What are the steps that you take? Because what we're trying to relay to the listeners is what goes on behind the scene so that they get an appreciation for the work that is done. The fact that it isn't willy-nilly, that not anybody could just jump up one day and become a paramedic or a dispatcher or a senior ambulance officer like Wendy is. So what do you do, Mark, when you get this information from Sharon?
Okay, and once the information is received, we transfer that information onto what we call our patient care report. This is a sheet that we fill out. This sheet is a legal document that starts with the process of ascertaining the call location, the nature of the incident, the patient's name, if possible. And like she said, it's given a call number, and we base on military times, the times you receive, so you get the time you were alerted and the time that you were dispatched. Based on the information from the dispatcher and the priority given, whether it's a priority one, two, or three. Priority ones basically are calls that require immediate response, any immediate life-threatening emergencies, heart attacks, strokes, respiratory problems, violent trauma, accidents, shooting, stabbings, etc. So if we had that particular type of call, depending on what is happening, we would also request partner agencies like police, fire, etc. While we respond to the call, we try to brainstorm with each other, okay, what could we be possibly facing? On approach to the scene, if we have a visual of the incident, let's say we're going to a car accident at the junction of Mile and a Quarter, for example, on arrival at the scene, as we approach, we look and do what we call a scene size up to determine exactly what has happened, because you can appreciate information can be lost in transmission. A person might say a truck and a car was involved in an accident. When you get there, it's actually a bicycle and a bus. Okay, they might say one person injured, and then when you get there and you start to assess the scene, then you realize it's more like 23 people injured.
Wow.
If it's a normal house call, what we're trying to do now, especially in this current COVID climate, we try to do as much information gathering before we enter the residence. That is to say, there's certain questions now pertinent to the current climate that we need to ask, information that we need to have beforehand before we enter the residence and actually have face-to-face contact with the patients. In my experience so far, a lot of persons are pretty receptive. They understand the process based on what is going on, and they're usually cooperative. Sometimes you get a little bit of resistance, but we get the information outside. Then, depending on what we're told, we would then do our face-to-face greet. If the patient can come out to us, if they're ambulant, and they can come to us, then they come to us, and we conduct the interview there before transferring into the ambulance. Once contact is made with the patient and the scene has been deemed safe enough to operate from our initial assessment, that is when we will do now our patient assessment, starting with a history taking, trying to find out why we are here, what has happened, what is going on, how long it was going on for. It might seem repetitive from the questions that the dispatcher might ask, but and then the questions we would ask, but people must appreciate it is assessment right along the chain from point of call to the time we arrive at scene, and that also continues when we arrive at the hospital. We do physical examinations, we look for signs and symptoms, we look for injuries, illnesses, and we fix what we can. That's as basic as I can put it. So if the person is having respiratory distress and it requires oxygen, we give oxygen. If the person is a diabetic who exhibits signs of low blood sugar, then we will resuscitate them. Well, if you're a paramedic, we will use the dextrose or the EMTs that would use sugar-based solution. That's if the person can't speak. So we fix what we can. If the person's injured and we see any physical injuries, then we will manage those injuries, control bleeding, immobilize fractures, stabilize the patient, take vitals, and then we will basically take them off to the hospital. If they're emergent, we will pre-alert the hospital to let them know what we have coming in so they wouldn't be surprised when the ambulance just turns up. And we explain to people that this is also part of the process. And then assessment again takes place on our arrival at accident emergency department.
Because I do remember from being in A&E that there's somebody who reports, who receives your report.
That is correct.
The accident, right, in the accident emergency department. Or I remember from working at the polyclinic, we had to hand over the patients to you, and then you would go off to the hospital.
That is correct.
So, Wendy, let's ask you now. You are in management, as it were, an ambulance officer. So there are some questions about the logistics. Somebody calls in with chest pain, for example, and we're thinking maybe this could be a heart attack based on the information that Sharon might have received from the caller.
Uh-huh.
So the individual needs to get from their home to the hospital as quickly as possible. So this requires that the person who is driving, commonly known here in Barbados as the ambulance driver, the ambulance driver, no disrespect at all, that the ambulance driver needs to get there as quickly as possible. We've heard discussions on the radio about persons driving, the ambulance driving quickly, about persons complaining about the fact that they can't hear sirens. What do the sirens mean? So let's go through these questions. Are the persons who are driving the ambulance allowed to drive over the speed limit? Wendy?
The law provides for emergency vehicles to exceed the speed limit as long as it is safe.
Okay.
It does not mean drive about 220 and 180. That's not what it's talking about. They allow you to go over the speed limit a little bit as long as it's safe to do so.
Okay, so we've noticed that, I know that the law says that upon hearing, and this is just me paraphrasing, upon hearing a siren or seeing flashing beacons, you pull to your left to allow that vehicle, that emergency vehicle, to pass. That's correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so there's been the question about pulling to the left. We are on the ABC example, ABC Highway, for example, two lanes heading north and two lanes heading south. I'm in the right lane heading south. So I happen to glance up and I see some flashing beacons behind me. And it seems silly, you know, but the law says that I'm supposed to pull to the left.
I think we have to use wisdom. If you hear something, you have to look and see where this sound is coming from. Is it in front of you? Depending on where you are, sound echoes.
I recognize that the ambulance is behind me, heading south as well.
So you recognize the ambulance is behind you. If the ambulance is on your left, let's say you're on the ABC highway, the ambulance is already in your left lane, you're on the right lane. There's no reason for you to pull over to the left in front of the ambulance.
Yeah, and the reason, it might seem silly, right, but the reason I made sure to mention this point is that there were some persons on other radio shows who were adamant that you must pull left.
Mm-hmm.
So we are clarifying that you use wisdom.
You have to use wisdom in any case. You have to use wisdom. Because the vehicle is coming, you are doing your own thing, and then we also have to be cognizant of the fact that some people may have the AC on, the radio on, and so on. So they might not actually hear the ambulance. So the ambulance guy even has to be more careful. But he is not certain that the person hears him. So he might make a maneuver and you pull to the left side and there goes an accident.
Yes, that is quite true, because there have been times when persons have said that it's only when the ambulance is right behind you that you hear the siren. That's been a complaint by several persons. And you say there's so many different factors. There's noise on the road, somebody's music up ahead of you, your windows are up. So you don't hear
a lot of factors. Exactly.
Right, so you have to be on the lookout, I guess. I remember there was an old driving instructor who said one of the things that you need to know what's going on the road is something that's going on behind you. So every once in a while, you just take a look back, just glance back.
Exactly, exactly. And it is not a case of just making a siren louder, because you got to remember that the human ear could only tolerate safely a certain decibel sound. Exactly.
So let's talk about the different meanings of flashing beacons and sirens. I've been curious about this because on some occasions, you see an ambulance going somewhere, and the beacons are on. And for those of you, the beacons are the lights on the top of the vehicle and to the front of the vehicle, which are flashing, and the siren is going. But on other occasions, you might only see the beacons flashing and hear no siren. Or on other occasions, you see neither. You neither hear the siren nor the flashing beacons, but you can see that there are EMTs and paramedics in the back. So what do the different combinations mean?
Well, collectively, siren or beacon are referred to as a warning device or warning devices. And in practice, they both mean the same thing. Depending on the person who is driving, so if I'm on the straight road, the highway, there's nothing in front of me, I'm going to an emergency, the road is clear. I mean, there's no real reason to put a siren on. If you understand what I'm saying.
Yes.
The siren is to alert the driver that an emergency vehicle wants to get through. And that is enhanced by the lighting system. But if you have the light on alone or the siren on alone, essentially they mean the same thing. The light is an added feature of safety. Because I think you would appreciate that if you hear a sound, but you can't see the lights, you just hear the sound, you don't know where it's coming from. So they both go together. But to say that one is the emergency one and one is non-emergency is not correct. They're both emergency devices, both warning devices.
Okay, so Mark had mentioned earlier, and both Mark and Sharon had mentioned earlier about level one emergencies, and there are three levels, one, two, and three, the divisions into categories.
Yes, in our system, we prioritize called priority one, priority two, priority three. Priority one is something that must be seen right now. What Sharon would tell you, I suppose, is that we don't make the protocol. The protocol already has predetermined what is the priority one. So we don't really make that decision. Let's say you call and say that someone was hanging. Automatically, that's a priority one. The ambulance is sent out. All other details comes afterwards. If you have a near drowning, the same thing would happen. Heart attack. See, those are the priority ones. Priority twos refer to persons who are serious, but they can wait until the priority ones are dealt with. So generally speaking, our calls are priority ones, priority two. Priority threes are generally calls of a lesser acuity. Like if we have to transfer someone from a medical facility and is already categorized as a priority three, if you understand what I mean.
Yes. So those who are not very serious emergencies. I mean, all emergencies are serious, but those who are not life-threatening, as it were, could be.
Exactly. So we don't like to use the word serious. Exactly. We don't like to use the word serious or not serious because people feel you are looking at their complaint, you know, that
and
kind of thing.
But it's not
that. Exactly. It's not that. It is that I don't think you would like to know that you are waiting for an ambulance and the ambulance goes for someone who stumped a toe and you have a heart attack. So you have to put them in priorities and different levels of response that you know what you're dealing with. But our mission is to save and preserve life.
So one of the things we want to discuss is, in what ways do you three believe the system is being abused? One or two from each of you.
Well, actually, I don't like the word abuse.
Misused?
I prefer to say that sometimes people do not understand how the healthcare system works, and then they would call for things that perhaps you should not call an ambulance for. For example, people call access the time and the date,
for example.
Yes, that happens. People can ask medical questions. We would like to help with medical questions, but right now we don't have the capacity to answer those. So we will give the person the number to call the accident emergency department, speak to a doctor or speak to a polyclinic or something like that. But sometimes people call because they do not understand that what they are calling about can be seen by the polyclinic in their catchment area.
Yeah.
Yes. So I want to look at it as their
message.
Yes. So I'm going to use the word abuse. I don't know if Martin is wrong.
Yeah, we'll go with misuse from lack of knowledge.
Yes, from a lack of knowledge. I'd rather use that term.
That's the word.
Misuse. Mm-hmm. So my apologies. Let's go with misused.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about some of the... Mark or Sharon, do you have any other ways where you think the system is misused?
Mm-hmm.
From my experience, the misuse can also come from persons who know what to say to get an ambulance. The Barbadian public they're very educated, okay? They know if they say certain phrases and certain catch terms, once they use those terms, they would probably get an ambulance as soon as one is available. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you might hear someone say, send an ambulance for John Brown. He's an asthmatic. John Brown may be an asthmatic, yes, but at the time of the call, the problem might not even be related to asthma. But they know that if they call and say, John Brown is an asthmatic, they know from the time we hear asthmatic and the word reason is mentioned, that is a respiratory emergency.
Yeah.
You might also get another call for James Brown, who is a cardiac patient. From the time we hear a cardiac patient, our red flags goes off as well. However, when you respond, lights blazing, turning on, thinking that this person is having a cardiac emergency, John Brown basically has a bruise on his ankle for the last 2 weeks, and it has not gotten better, so he now wants to go to the hospital.
Yes, and you should mention, Mark, that usually it is not John Brown who is doing this. It is the relatives who want John Brown to be home sometimes, and they use those phrases.
Yeah.
Correct.
Oh, so this, as persons are listening, please, we're begging you, we're asking politely that you, if you don't have a complaint that warrants the ambulance being called to your house, please, because there's somebody else who might need that ambulance for a life-threatening emergency. So you call the ambulance for your swollen ankle for 2 weeks, and there's somebody who is having 3 and 4 seizures at a time.
Yes.
Right? That's not a good use of our limited resources, and that's one of the things, right? We must remember the resources are limited. How many ambulances are there on the fleet?
We have 10 ambulances on the fleet.
Right. So we have 10 ambulances, and let's say our population is 275,000.
Mm-hmm.
We have, I don't remember the statistics right now for diabetics and hypertensives, but we can imagine mm-hmm. that there are several people who have heart attacks and who have symptoms of strokes and so on. So there might be a given time that some person calls for an ambulance and one is probably just coming back in from an emergency, one is out to repair, one is on the road somewhere, and there's no ambulance available.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. So we do want persons to know that when you hear that there's no unit available, it does not mean that the gentlemen and ladies are sitting in the department with their ankles crossed, twiddling their thumbs.
Yes, in a case, if I can take this part here, in a case like that too, what we usually ask, if it is not a dire emergency, we usually ask persons
if there is some way that they can transport the patient, you know, so that that can cut down on the time wait too. Because it might be a case where the ambulance, we might have one come in, and just as it comes in, you know, the call was there, but then a dire emergency comes in. So then that call now would just get put back because we have to deal, as we said before, with the priority one call. So the person with the swollen ankle for the last 2 weeks that is there waiting for the ambulance, if we get a chest pain come in, you know, we have to send for that before we can send for the swollen ankle.
Right, and that's understandable. So we're asking you to use the service wisely. I don't think that any of the gentlemen and ladies there, when you call in, all the dispatchers are female?
No, we have one male dispatcher.
Right, so the gentlemen and ladies who are the dispatchers, they're not going to sit there and say to you that there's no unit available when there's a unit available. Right, so
if I can add as well.
Sure, I want to ask a question though, Mark. Before
sure.
you do that, when an ambulance returns to the ambulance service, it's not that as soon as you get there, the ambulance is ready to be used again.
Exactly. Because we have to go through a cleaning routine. We have to make sure that you're safe as well. I mean, you're the calling public. So we have to make sure vehicles are clean. Mm-hmm. So ambulance comes to you clean, and when it goes back, it's clean again. So it always comes to you clean.
Okay. So that's very reassuring. So, Mark, what did
yes,
you ma'am. Want to share?
No, just to add to what Mr. Cadogan and what Mrs. Bascom were saying, it is important that we get the accurate information because that determines the level of response and how soon you can actually get that response. So if someone calls and gives inaccurate information, it basically puts any other user who would be calling to require service on pause in terms of what next to do. In relation to our fleet, we have a fleet of 10 units. However, on a day-to-day basis, we run a 24 operation, three shifts on, one shift off, and each shift has roughly between 5 to 6 crews, a crew basically made up of 2 personnel on duty. So at any one time, you can have like up to a maximum of 6 units on the road.
Maybe 7, yeah.
Right, 6 to 7 units on the road sometimes. So it's not that you're going to have 10 ambulances on the road at one time, but that's just the total fleet number. But on a day-to-day basis, you can have anywhere between 5 to 6 units, maybe up to 7, depending on how the vehicular start is at that time. So I just wanted to put that out there just for clarification.
And when we think about it as well, perhaps there's a day when there might be smoke inhalation, several asthmatics in a particular location need to be transported, or there was a mass casualty and several people needed to be transported from a scene to the hospital. So there are reasons why several units would not be in Wildey at a given point in time. So it's sort of like a rotating system. So the ambulance comes in, it's cleaned, and another call comes in, and the ambulance goes back out.
To give you an example, too, of the reality that me and my fellow operators face as well, there are some days you can report for duty, and Ms. Baskin will give us a call, and as soon as we are completing that one, or even before we can even complete that call fully, we are told to call base via landline, which means basically as soon as you hand over, call back. So there are instances when we will not even get back to base. It means that while we were out, a number of other calls have come in that require emergency response as well. So there are going to be some instances where you can go to work at the start of your duty time and not get back to base literally until you've come to the end of your day. Sometimes we have those hectic days as well. So that just goes to show you the call volume that we can experience. And bearing in mind that you can have 50 ambulances, 100 ambulances, 270,000 ambulances in Barbados, but this is only one extra person on island. That person still has to wait until one of those units become free. Yes, ma'am.
So let's talk a little bit about requirements. So we heard briefly about the studies that you would have to do, the courses that you would have to take. In terms of scheduling and shifts, Wendy, because I'm thinking that you're the person who's responsible for managing.
Yes.
Is there a limit to the number of hours that the EMTs and paramedics are allowed to be on duty?
Well, we work within the labor relations, you know, like, so it's 40 hours a week.
Sometimes you go over that.
Yeah, understood. And in the social professions such as medicine and the other allied health professions, sometimes you have to go over those set hours.
Mm-hmm.
Understood. What has been your biggest challenge, you think, with working in the Barbadian Emergency Ambulance Service?
I don't know which I would call the biggest, but there are times where you're really stretched. For example, I think we were hinted before about my Chelsea incident. And what? So if 10 or more people are injured or feared injured, then the ambulance service is on full alert. We are all out there. Or there are 10 or more people injured. But that also involves the staff of the accident emergency department who is there. You can see where we're going already.
Yeah.
It also involves the Department of Emergency Management. It involves the police. And it involves also the Barbados Defense Force, right? And the Fire Service. So you can see that all your agencies out there. So to me, that's a big challenge. We would have had some major incidents over the years. I don't want to call them for fear of recalling bad memories to some people.
Yeah.
But and you will find that you are out for 5 hours and so on just to manage this incident. And during that time, part of the challenge, it escalates now because all those people who Mark was talking about before who had the heart attack, who have status epileptic and so on, they now have to, they're still in the system waiting.
Understood. So it's a matter of trying to juggle priority cases and... Understood.
Yes.
So it must be difficult. So Mark, is there a system in place for you gentlemen and ladies to, as it were, come down after these various experiences?
Most of the times, you don't really get that time to really sit down and totally diffuse if you really understand the nature of our job. Because in most cases, it's usually you complete one call and then it's on to the next. Somewhere in between there, you would try to talk to your colleague, especially if you can see something has bothered them, something's affecting them. Say, are you okay? You want to talk? You would try to do a buddy-buddy debrief. However, if there is a situation where it is beyond a peer talk, so to speak, there are mechanisms in place through our medical consultant where we can seek expert help, so to speak, where we can go and speak to persons within the psychiatry department at the hospital where they are open. They have helped us on many other occasions where staff had to diffuse, where staff had to work through certain things that they would have seen that would have elicited certain emotions and certain stressors. Because as you can appreciate, dealing with death, dying, bleeding, sometimes verbal abuse, sometimes physical abuse, sometimes the whole totalitarian nature of the job itself in terms of the quantum of work that you can experience can place stress on emergency personnel. At the end of the day, when we take off this uniform, we are human beings. We go home to our families. The Caribbean setting, and especially among males, we don't like to talk. We keep a lot of things inside. And sometimes that can lead to, you holding things inside. Sometimes you might take it home.
Yeah,
and
take it out on the wrong people.
You can take it out on the wrong people, or it's even difficult if you want to talk to your significant other at home to open up about certain things because they may not be able to, one, stomach it. They may not be able to fully understand and appreciate the emotions that it can elicit. But we have had situations where we needed to take it up a notch, where we called in the professionals, and we've had good responses from the team within the hospital. So we have that avenue in case it is needed.
Well, let's take this opportunity to say good evening to Dr. David Beyer. I believe that he might be listening in. He's the consultant responsible for the Emergency Ambulance Service. Good evening, Dr. Beyer. Hope that you are having a wonderful evening. Siobhan, just now when Mark was talking about abuse, I heard a little response there at verbal abuse. What do you think are some of the characteristics that the dispatchers should possess in order to handle the persons who are calling in?
We have to be patient. We have to be patient because we know at that time it is stressful for them. To see a loved one ill is not easy. So there are times when, as I said, we have to ask these series of questions. They think that we're asking too many questions and they just need help.
We get the abusive language, we get the shout at, the curse, you know, the put down the phone and so on at times, especially when it gets to the point where there's no unit available. And we have to tell them as soon as one becomes available, we will call and let you know it's en route to you. I've been there. We cannot match their anger. We have to take a deep breath, listen, and be patient with the person. Try to get the information that we need and try to help that person. Just try to calm them down that we can get the information that we need.
And now that you're talking about calming down, we are going to have our little simulation.
Mm-hmm.
This is totally off the top. We will see where this simulation goes. And then I have just another light scenario that we want to discuss, and then we'll wrap up our show this evening. But another thought that I was having just before our simulation, as I was preparing for the show this evening, it really does touch me when you're able to call on different healthcare professionals. We've had allied healthcare professionals on the show. We've had regular men and women. And when I say regular men and women, I mean persons who are not working in the healthcare field on the show over the past two seasons. And this is our third season now. And 99.9% of the persons who I've called and asked to volunteer to take time out to educate the public, to let persons get an inside look into their different functions, have willingly said yes. So I'm taking this opportunity to say to you three, thank you so very much. I appreciate the time. And I'm sure our listeners do as well.
You're welcome.
So here we go. So I've just dialed 511.
What's the address of your emergency? Good evening. Emergency ambulance service. What's the address of your emergency?
Good evening. I live at Mile and a Quarter, St. Peter.
What's the telephone number you're calling from?
411-1111. I hope that's not anybody's telephone number. 411-1111.
I'll repeat that number, 411-1111.
Yes, ma'am.
May I ask who I'm speaking to?
You're speaking to Renee Boyce.
Renee Boyce. Tell me exactly what is going on. What is happening?
My chest hurts. Mom, my chest hurting me.
How old are you, Miss Boyce?
Do I really have to answer that?
Make up a number.
I am 61. Mom, my chest hurting me. My chest. Hello?
Are you alert? Are you breathing? How is your breathing? Are you breathing normal?
No, ma'am. The last two nights, I find that I was not breathing good at all. And now I'm coughing, and it hurting me to breathe, ma'am. You ain't got nobody there? You ain't got nobody there that can help me?
I tried to get some assistance for you as soon as possible. Another question I have to ask, do you suffer with any illnesses?
Yes,
or are
ma'am.
You on medication for anything?
Yes, please. The doctor gave me a puffer. He gave me a blue one and a brown one. And I just wheeze sometimes. When I get a bad cold, ma'am, I just can't breathe. And like,
okay.
No, so, my chest, ma'am, my chest.
Okay, but what illnesses do you suffer with? You're telling me about the medication, but what illnesses do you suffer with? What is the medication for?
I got the wheezing.
Yes.
And I got to use the puffer.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor tell me that I supposed to... Ma'am, my chest hurting me. The doctor
do you by any chance have a cardiac history?
Cardiac?
Yes, please. Meaning your heart. Do you suffer with your heart?
No, ma'am. No, the doctor didn't tell me so. Mm-mm. He said that I got, like, when the burn smoke.
Yeah.
When the fellow's smoking. Mm-hmm, that is bring on the wheezing or a bad cold. Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is the case, Mr. Boyce, where I give Mr. Boyce the information. I call him and the crew. I page them, give them the information, have the caller stay on the line. Is anyone there with you right now, ma'am?
No, please. It is just me. The children, they went down into Spite Stone a little while ago, but somebody out here burning stuff.
Okay, ma'am, just stay on the line. I need to give my information to my personnel, and I'll have an ambulance off to you as soon as possible.
Thank
information
you. Yes, thank
given.
You. Lord bless
okay,
you.
Ma'am, don't go off. I have to get your. Oh. I have to get the directions from you.
Okay.
Our
okay.
Information given to Mark. Mark, I'll give you the directions on the way to the call. Time given, out given. Ma'am, can you go ahead and give me those directions, please?
when you come on the highway, you have to pass St. Thomas Parish Church.
Yes.
And you drive straight. You pass the fire station and you drive.
Yes.
I don't even remember, you know, but you know.
Okay, I know where the St. Thomas Parish Church is. We're going out towards Portville.
Yes, you got to pass the factory. Yes, please.
Yes,
yes, please.
Yes.
And you know they got a restaurant there on the right hand side.
Yes,
there,
that's your fact. Okay, so we continue on that road.
And you keep going straight. You keep going.
Okay. Okay.
And then
right,
you come. Up
okay, ma'am. Okay, all right. I won't bother you any further. Exactly where in Mile and a Quarter do I find you? I know. Let's get from the gas station. Do we have to pass the gas station?
Yes, you know where it is. You'd make a left turn by the gas station.
Okay, left by the gas station.
Three houses down.
Three houses on the left or the right?
It's on the left side.
Yes.
And then you turn left, and I live in the brown house with
the
pink gallery.
With the pink gallery, that is on the left or the right?
That's on the left.
Very well. All right, the unit is on the way. Right,
hold on, ma'am. Hold on. I don't know if I can hold on.
Ma'am, I will stay on the line with you. I can't tell you how long because, you know, anything can happen on the road. But the unit will be there. I will get one to you as soon as possible.
They left already? They left somebody coming?
Yes, ma'am. They're on the way.
Okay. Oh, thank the Lord. Thank the Lord. Ma'am, you're so sweet. You're so sweet. Oh,
thank you.
Wait. I think I hear them. I hear them. Somebody outside. Somebody outside.
Yes. Okay, ma'am. All right, have a blessed evening.
Okay.
And thank you. Okay.
So this is where the person who has come, the EMT and the paramedic, they've come, they see me, I'm coughing, I'm short of breath. What would you do?
Okay, on arrival at scene, basically look at the person, try to ascertain is the right patient. Once we've ascertained is the right patient, we'll do a quick assessment. If there's, since she said that there was smoke in the area, if there's actual smoke still present, compounding her situation, we will try to move her to the vehicle where we can do the interview in a safe manner away from the smoke filled area. If she's having difficulty speaking, we wouldn't try to elicit too many responses from her. We would try to keep our questions to short yes, no, or possible head indication like shake your head yes, shake your head no answers, right? We try to get the information from them. We also ask about their ID card because, for example, she might call and say, my name is Mary Brown.
Yes.
But when you look at the ID card, you see Lucinda Holder. But especially if it's someone that's calling for the caller, everybody in the district knows her as Mary, but her legal name is Lucinda. So that's why it's important that we get the actual name of the ID card. Some people are not aware of their medical conditions, but when we look at the medication, the same question when she asks you if you suffer with cardiac problems or your heart, you said no. But yet, I might see particular medications that would suggest that, yes, this person does have a heart problem, does have hypertension, along with the inhalers that they take. All of that is part of our assessment. We would have applied oxygen at the earliest, after we would have taken initial oxygen saturation, to find out what her percentage oxygen saturation is in her blood. If it's too low, we will obviously apply high-flow oxygen. Okay, to try to make her comfortable, and that would ease her distress as well. Because you can appreciate that if her condition continues being so far out in Mile and a Quarter, and then we have to look at the return travel time to the hospital, we have to make sure that we monitor and manage this patient as aggressively as needed based on her presentation. Vitals will be taken, transport will be initiated, and if necessary, we will pre-alert the hospital to let them know what type of patient we're bringing in. So let's say I'm bringing in a 75-year-old female, history of asthma, hypertension, and cardiac person complaining of severe respiratory distress after being exposed to a nearby fire. At present, patient is alert-oriented with rapid breathing. I will give them the rate. I will give them the quality of the breathing. If I hear any wheezes, any decreased stress sounds, any absent chest sounds, give them all the necessary vitals, and more importantly, give them an ETA, which is an estimated time of arrival from the scene to the hospital, to give them an idea of how soon I will get there.
We expect to get there. Well, I wish to say thank you to you guys for playing along with my little scenario. Thank you so very much, because it does give some insight into how things happen.
Yeah.
So in the spirit of levity, before we get back to our serious stuff, I want each of you to tell me a short, funny story from your history. I have a story. I'm going to start with mine because I want you all to have the last word. So I was at Paragon. We had just done a blood drive with the members of the Defense Force, and we were on our last patient to take blood from him for blood donations. And this guy was tall, 6 feet some. And whilst we were doing it, we recognized this guy does not look well. He looked as though he is going to faint. And no sooner was the word faint out of our mouth, he was down for the count. So we were able to start giving fluids and so on. And he said he was fine. But the decision was taken to try to, you know, we just wanted to be sure. So we decided that we would take him down from Paragon to the hospital to accident and emergency. So it was, in my mind, going to be a, you know, a nice casual drive from Paragon to accident and emergency. And I said to the gentleman, well, he asked, you know, do we need the sirens? He's like, no, it's just, he's okay. You know, this is just for us to be sure. He's like, nah, man, we gonna put on these sirens. I was like, what? And all I managed to say was, what? After that, the ambulance door was closed. The driver passed, and the driver door was closed. And everything else from there was a blur. When we got to the gas station there at the top of Wilde, you know that funny corner where traffic's coming from Upper Wilde and traffic's coming from Upton? You know yeah. What I mean?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
There was a car that was coming up from the side road that obviously did not hear the siren. We missed this car by a millimeter, and we are still sailing around the corner, up the hill, up BET Hill, down St. Barnabas, to the left, past Sherbourne. I didn't even see Sherbourne. By the time we got to the hospital, the chair was needed to wheel me into accident and emergency because I could not stand up. I could not stand. And you can tell that this thing is still in my mind. The guy, he was able to walk in. They had to assist me in. Right? I could not stand up. My knees were weak. Right? Just from that one experience in an ambulance. Anyway, you guys carry on. A funny story.
I think Wendy got enough jokes from me and him.
Okay, Wendy, well, you share a story with us then, Wendy, as we are beginning to wind down.
Well, the funny story we have is that, and it goes back to getting the correct names and so on. And I remember years ago, we got a call to go for a guy called Herbie Quacks.
Herbie Quacks?
Herbie Quacks. To a St. John district, and we are going up the road, only to get into the district to find out there's no one in this district called Herbie Quacks. You know that? Paraquat is the ingredient, the main ingredient in Grumont Zone. But you know, there's a brand called Herbie Quat, a brand, something like Grumont Zone that's called Herbie Quat.
Okay.
If you're into your pesticides and herbicides and so on. Right, but anyhow, the thing is that the guy had ingested this substance called Herbie Quat. But the person who was calling was panicking so much. They told
dear.
Us that the guy's name is Herbie Quack. We can imagine you're in the district, so all of the laughing and so on. Actually, one person said, this guy here, his name is Herbie, but I don't know if his surname is Quack.
Oh, no. Whoa. And as we begin to wind down, Mark, anything from you, or that's enough laughter for you?
I think my colleague handled that aspect pretty much. I can't add that one at all.
Okay, no. Well, that one takes the cake. So... let me say thank you to each of you again. And as we become a little more serious one more time, I want each of you to think about something that you want listeners to remember about our show this evening. Something that you want them to remember about the emergency ambulance service, about its uses, anything that you want listeners to take home.
Okay, if I can, I'll start. As one of the vehicle operators, my plea and my appeal to fellow road users, please be cognizant of the presence of emergency vehicles on the road, not just ambulances, but all emergency vehicles. When you see the approach of an emergency vehicle with the lights on, scroll splashing, headlights on, please pull your vehicle to the side of the road where possible. Traveling at the same speed and putting out your hand, telling us to overtake, creates a very dangerous situation for us.
Yeah.
All right? For those who are calling the service, we kindly ask you to give accurate information that can basically help us to provide you with the appropriate response that you're requiring. and also when we arrive at the scene to cooperate with us. We are coming into your setting and we are asking you personal questions, but please bear in mind that as health professionals, we require certain information to pass on to other health professionals. We are the link in the chain. We are the extension of the accident and emergency department. We are their eyes, their ears, sometimes their nose. You understand? So we need that information to pass on to them and also for us to treat you accordingly. So what we're asking for is greater cooperation from the members of the public, some understanding from the public as well, bearing in mind that we're not just sitting down there, that we're serving as many people as we can who are also calling for service. And we're asking, please, to respect the presence of the ambulances on the road and other emergency vehicles. So that's my take on it for now.
Okay, Sharon or
okay.
Wendy?
Yeah. Okay, as a telephone, as a emergency medical dispatcher, when we ask the questions, especially if the person we ask, are you with the patient right now? Some persons call from St. Lucie, the patient is in St. Philip. Relatives call persons that don't live there to give information for them to call. We prefer that the person that is with the patient, that they call so that we can ask the questions and give the pre-arrival instructions so that when the unit gets there, they can have everything there for us. In a case, if we have to do CPR, we can give those the instructions. It does not make sense the person in St. Lucie calls for the person in St. Philip. Because once the person in St. Philip calls and is there with the patient, we can give them the exact thing to do.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
And Wendy, you can close up.
Yes, I would just say that have all of your particulars ready. Have your medication, your ID card, and so on ready when the ambulance gets there. Because for an ambulance to come there, you were saying it's an emergency, but then we have to wait until you do that or to dress a person. That's not good.
Okay, yes, that is quite true. Lady and gentlemen, I want to say thank you very much one more time for taking time out and educating us. And I'm looking forward to having you again where we can ask some more questions about future training, what we can hope to see in the future and so on. So many different things we can talk about and maybe another scenario. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome and thank you.
Yes, you're welcome as well. So you've been listening to the Better Health Radio Show. I am your hostess, Dr. Renee Boyce. Join me again next week, 6 to 7 on VOB 92.9 FM. Ronnie?
Thank you, Renee, and thank you to all of your wonderful contributors today. Tremendous program, and I'm sure that those listening locally, regionally, and internationally were blessed, touched, and informed by your Better Health Radio Show. Thank you.
All right, have a good night.
You too. Okay, bye-bye.